You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with Rick Franzi and Doug Geveller.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass. This is Rick Franzi, your host for today's episode, and this is Critical Mass, the radio show. My business partner, Doug Geveller, and I co-host this business talk show, and it airs every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m. West Coast time. So for those of you that are listening to us live, welcome to the show. This is the 88th installment of Critical Mass. This is the 23rd show that we're on for the year of 2010, and if you're expecting to be hearing my interview this afternoon with Karen of No Limits, I have to let you know that Karen is not feeling well today. She has been under the weather for most of this week, and we were kind of worried that maybe she wouldn't be fully recovered to be our guest today. So, as we say in the business, the show must go on, and so I would suggest to all of you, stay tuned, because we have two very interesting guests that will be joining me here later this hour, but Karen, we will reschedule for some time, hopefully later this month, when her vocal cords and her temperature is back to normal, and we can have her join us, because as you know, she's the first female promoter of MMA events here in California, also along with her husband, Jim. They run an excellent fitness gym, which is titled No Limits. Outstanding facility, very differentiated business model, and I was excited to have her on our show. And so we will reschedule Karen shortly. So please watch our upcoming emails that announce our guests, or visit our radio show's website, octalkradio.net, where there's a full listing of all of the guests of Critical Mass and the ever-increasing show content that's here on this fantastic radio station here in beautiful Orange County, California. I thought I'd take a couple minutes and share with you some interesting learnings that I have been exposed to here recently, and really ask our listening audience to consider the possibility of building customers who are evangelists for your business, and the power of having customers as really a free sales organization for you. This concept has been in my mind for years, and having a long and successful sales and marketing career, you know, turning customers into advocates back in the day, we used to call them advocates. An advocate customer was a noble thing to do, and certainly I saw many times in my technology sales career how powerful it was in user groups, etc., when you had a satisfied group of people talking positively about your firm and your products, how much of a halo effect the company could get for that, and the receptivity of the other people in the room to the concept that what these peers were saying was factual and accurate and worth listening to. Earlier this year, I saw a statistic that said that less than 20% of people today believe advertising. The vast majority aren't persuaded any longer by interruption marketing, as Seth Godin calls it. You know, the constant bombardment of messages, and I think the number that I've heard in that area is over 3,000 messages a day. We as people on this planet get hit with, whether it's on the television, radio, internet, or whatever, email. And we've successfully learned to evolve and adapt, and it doesn't reach us any longer. But fully 70%, and actually I saw another stat of 77% of people responded that they are influenced, either positively or negatively, by the recommendations or references or comments of peers, of people they perceive to be peers who, you know, the key thing there are people who aren't who aren't perceived to have a vested interest in the business that they're talking about. A good idea of, you know, kind of word of mouth marketing and customer evangelism would be, you know, movies, right? Somebody goes to see a movie last weekend and I say, I love it, Sherlock Holmes, it exceeded my expectations. And then you engage that person in the conversation if you're interested about Robert Downey Jr. and the cast and the script, and possibly that compels the individual who hasn't seen the movie to go, well, you know, if I'm going to go to the movies, I think I'll go see Sherlock Holmes because, frankly, maybe I haven't seen a good movie in a long time, and this raises my confidence that that's worth my time. And so, you know, there's a term also, you know, that goes along with word of mouth, which is word of mouse, which is the power of really what we're seeing in social media. And this is an element of social media, internet radio in all of its forms, and certainly in the talk radio format that we employ here on the show Critical Mass, is an excellent example of using new media and social media to continue to bring out messages and influence people and share information. But my point being that traditional word-of-mouth marketing is an element of, and in an electronic age, is even more powerful in turning customers who have a positive experience with you into advocates, but also having customer evangelism. For the members of Renaissance Executive Forums who have gone through what we call Strategies for Success, which is our off-site retreat where we develop content specifically once a year for them. We did it this year based on an outstanding book by Chip Connelly. It's called Peak, and the subtext to the book is How Great Companies Get Their Mojo Back from Following Maslow. And I won't go into it all today because the point that I really wanted to talk about was Chip's perception and position is that for companies that truly have that customer experience corrected and is an asset to their company, they really do build self-actualized customers. For those of you that might remember Maslow, and at the top of a functioning pyramid of human interrelations is a self-actualized person. He draws the analogy to companies and customers and employees and investors. At the end of the day, his point being this top of the pyramid type of customers for you can really become a very persuasive group of people that help your business and really drive your business to new levels. One of the stories that he uses is how many people around the world have the corporate logo of Harley Davidson tattooed on their body, and that's because they've identified to such a deep level with Harley Davidson that they want to be identified with the brand. And clearly, one could imagine if you engage them in a conversation about the Harley brands and the products, that they would probably have pretty strong positive viewpoints about the product. And if you might be in the mood or predisposed to buying a motorcycle, possibly that level of commitment to the brand and loyalty could influence you as a prospective new client. 25,000 people who have those logos, that's a pretty big informal sales force, I would think, you know, an advocacy group. One of our members who mentioned that he believes that probably the creations of his grandfather, you know, were greater than that. And I thought that was an interesting comment, and more to be shared on that later. But the point being that the opportunity to create a differentiated experience with your clients is one that each and every business, whether you're B2C or B2B, should really take a pause and reflect on, because that opportunity to create that customer evangelism in your customers, and it can't happen with all of them, I recognize, but some of them, some segment of them, can really, especially in these times when we're starting to see in many industries the seeds of recovery and the opportunities, can maybe hopefully accelerate your ability to drive future success. The Strategies for Success training that we had, that we led our members through with Chip Connelly in his book, The Peak, where he talks about self-actualized customers who are then evangelists for your company, led me to do some searching. And recently I picked up audiobook, which is called Creating Customer Evangelists. And it's by authors Ben McConnell and Jackie Huba, spelled H-U-B-A. I'm currently in the middle of listening to the audiobook. I'm a fan of audiobooks. I spend a good amount of time in my car here in Southern California, as you can imagine, driving around visiting with clients and radio show guests and partners and friends. And it makes, for my mind, it makes great use of the windshield time that I have. But I would recommend this. I've only begun it several CDs into the multi-CD pack, but I see a lot of parallels in what Ben and Jackie are talking about in their book, which I'm listening to as an audiobook, Creating Customer Evangelists. And what we were, as Renaissance facilitators, Doug and I were leading our members through with Chip Connelly's book about having customers who were self-actualized. And there's a number of of examples and profiles of different companies that Ben and Jackie use to help to explain how best practices, if you will, in this area. And so it's one of the things that I am fascinated by because, again, with my background in sales and marketing and running businesses and now helping other business owners and top executives to move their businesses to the next level and make better, more informed decisions, this is an area where I believe companies can really begin to transform their relationship with their clients. And again, it's not just the B2C model. There is that opportunity to really be a differentiated supplier in the B2B space as well. So I wanted to talk about the idea here briefly today of really building a community of clients who have a relationship with your business that transcends the traditional you send me money and I deliver either great and outstanding service or product that satisfies, you know, your needs and your desires, but really looking for a way to create even more of a relationship and connection with your clients. Part of our business practice here for Critical Mass for Business that Doug and I lead here in Orange County is building customer advisory boards and really using the traditional customer advisory. When you hear that term, you think maybe, you know, traditional focus group or something like that. And there's elements of that in customer advisory boards, but also leveraging technology so that companies become truly listening organizations in tune with what their clients are saying and thinking. And one of the best practices that I've seen in this area is making sure that it's easy for a customer to provide you feedback, both positive feedback and negative feedback, and to create an organization and a company, especially around technology, that makes it very open and obvious that you're listening and that giving them tools to allow them to respond, whether that's you're blogging and you're listening to the comments coming back, or you're making it easy for people to know who to call. You know, don't make it difficult for clients to figure out how to get in touch with you. Recently, I was at a technical conference here in Orange County, and there was experts in the field of website development talking about good and bad practices. And one of the good practices that they talked about was don't frustrate your clients by hiding your contact information. You know, don't make them make multiple choices off your menu system to get to a place where they finally figure out how to send you an email or a phone call, make a phone call. You know, make that as obvious and easy for clients to, because if you do, they're more than likely to respond. If you make it difficult, you will lose a significant percentage of the information that could come to you because you're not making it easy for them to reach out. So, you know, in the 16 years that Doug and I have been here in Orange County and with Doug's coaching practice and coaching perspective and the peer groups that we've built, and for the past year with the radio show, you know, we've had we've been so fortunate to be able to talk with thought leaders, not only here in the county, but frankly around the world. Some of you today may be listening to this either live as a podcast in, you know, far corners of the globe. And that really is satisfying to us that we have that kind of a reach. But we see that clients and companies and thought leaders are really looking for ways to become even more transparent in their dealings with their clients, because what they find is there is a strong desire for this community of people to be able to communicate with one another. You know, the rising ability through different tools, whether you're on Twitter and Facebook or you're not, maybe you're simply on LinkedIn at this time, which is a very strong business tool. But it's one thing to be on it and to have electronic information there. It's another thing to be connected to a community of like-minded people who you are learning from and sharing with your knowledge in a sense of peer-to-peer communication. And I'm excited by the trends that I'm seeing, the rapid acceptance for tools like Twitter, and people who then come out and build additional tools to help people to figure out how to really mine the Twitter opportunity with them, create and find people who are talking about topics that you're interested in, figuring out who's truly following you and who's not. And based on the kind of people that are following you, finding others. So if you just go into Google and type, Twitter tools, you'll be surprised how many websites and postings have been done where they're aggregating the various different tools that are developed to help you with Twitter. And you can go down through those listings of 25, 37. I mean, I suggest you do that if you're still, figuring out how to maximize your time spent in social media and specifically Twitter. You will see that a lot of energy and thought has gone into trying to help that experience be even more beneficial for people who are looking to find like-minded individuals. And with the Renaissance Executive Forums business that Doug and I lead, we know that 80% of what a business owner or top executive deals with on a daily basis can be common with other peer business owners and top executives who can be in wildly different industries. What's important is that they're similar in size. And that's part of the reason why Doug and I have decided here in Orange County that when we build a peer group, we really work very closely with the prospective members. And then as we build out the peer group, once it's been launched, with the additional members that we add to it, to make sure the sensibility and knowledge and company size are within a range that when they get to work together, they really are working as true peers and not have a wide diversity or disparity in business size. We find that member experience based on research in this area and reports is higher when you're able to put people together who have relatively similar sized business experiences or businesses that they're leading. So, our website, which is Critical Mass for Business, Critical Mass for F-O-R, business, is a great site for you to visit if you're interested in understanding both what we do as a business and how it might help, but also there's information there. There's links to past radio shows that have been hosted here on octalkradio.net so that you can go back in our archives and learn more from past radio show guests. You can obviously get this information off of Apple iTunes as well. If you're a reader and you would like to sit down and understand the peer group experience, then I would encourage you to read what has been called the definitive guidebook to the CEO peer group experience. And no surprise, that's called Critical Mass. It's a book that I wrote 2 years ago now, and it's available on Amazon.com. And you can certainly link to it and find it off of our website, Critical Mass. And I would encourage you, if you're interested or you think that, ask yourself the question, I think we're making good decisions in this business, but how do I benchmark that, against a reasonable sampling of peers? Many people who join peer groups around the world are looking to improve the quality of the decisions they make, but also validate at some level that the decisions that they're currently making are really best in class relative to the peer group they're exposed to. And that is one of the tremendous powers of the CEO peer group. It's, kind of feedback and the opportunity to really make sure that you're getting good insights. It's really not what you don't, it's not what you don't know. It's what you don't know that is the challenge, if that makes sense. By that I mean there's a tremendous blind spot that many business owners have because they work so hard, heads down in their business, running it and taking care of the details and fixing the issues, because there's always issues that float to the owner's desk or CEO, that sometimes they don't have the time they would like to sit back and work on their business and understand from a different perspective is what they're doing, all that they can, and are there risks to their business that they're not aware of. And that, I think of it kind of like an iceberg, Business owners can see what they know, and they know what they don't know, and they work on that. But there may be many times under the waterline an even bigger amount of information that they need to know that they can't really see. And many times in the peer group process, through the different tools that we use to help people talk about and resolve opportunities and challenges, much of what's below the water becomes surfaced and can be then dealt with. I am fascinated watching business owners and entrepreneurs and CEOs, general managers, when they recognize the challenge and the opportunity, how they can rally the resources and execute against it. I'm in a peer group myself. I had my meeting this morning in Los Angeles, and it's really for me an exciting morning to spend with the group because just by being there, you feel good about what you're doing. You share some common discussions with people that you respect and come to really admire, and also you feel good because maybe a couple of the suggestions that you make are taken by some of the members and acted upon. And what's the value of that new perspective or fresh idea? Many times you're working so hard you don't see the forest for the trees kind of a thing. And when somebody asks you a question that causes you to have this moment of enlightenment, maybe, then you can act on that in a way different. All subsequent decisions become colored, affected by what you just heard. And really the outcome is, kind of our tagline here for Critical Mass for Business, which is helping you make better, more informed decisions, which at the end of the day has a very large impact on the firm's ability to, kind of grow and continue to evolve. 1 or 2% business improvement each year over what a business owner would get on their own without the help of the advice of the other members in a peer group. I mean, if you take that out 5 or 10 years, where can a business be versus where it would be? Probably both be successful, but I think, the additional couple percent each year could make a huge difference out over time. And so, obviously, I am a big fan and believer in the peer group experience, not just because I lead them today here in Orange County, but also because I was the member for a number of years and I saw it, how it affected my business when I ran my manufacturing, my $70 million manufacturing company. So I encourage you to check out Critical Mass for Business, but this is Critical Mass, the radio show here on octalkradio.net. And as I said, we would have guests as well this afternoon, and I see from my producer that Chris Keller and Richard Hamm of La Casa Resorts Del Camino are now ready and available to be brought onto the show. So before they come on, I just want to say that, they're the owners and energy, if you will, behind Casa Resorts Incorporated, which is an independently owned and operated hospitality group that brings intimate ambiences to California's premier tourist destinations. For those of you here in Southern California, you're probably familiar with and have been at the rooftop. I was telling a friend of mine that Chris and Richard were going to be on the show, and she said, "Really? I was at the rooftop last night." So that just speaks to how popular that is, as well as the Hotel Menage, which is in Anaheim, and the Laguna Beach Inn, as well as other properties. So, without any further ado, let's bring on Chris and Richard. Welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
It's good to have you. Let's get right to the interview. I would ask you guys to, I was setting it up a little bit on the introduction, but can you tell our audience a little bit more about your path to your current business?
Absolutely. Both Richard and I spent many years in the corporate world. Richard was with the Hilton Corporation for about 18 years, and I did most of my growing up in business in Las Vegas. I opened up the MGM Grand Hotel, and then New York, immediately following that back in the mid-90s. And then I had the fortune of coming out to California to work with Richard with the Hilton Corporation for about 4 years before we branched out on our own.
So tell me, what did you see in the marketplace that made you think the world needed another hospitality group and that you guys could make a successful business at this?
Well, we were two young, energetic guys that would work very hard every day, and we knew what we could do for the company we were currently with, and we one day decided that we wanted to focus on building our own company. And we had some, great luck and finding La Casa Camino, our first property that we bought in 2002. And we knew at that time the boutique market was still, you know, somewhat in its infancy, at least in the Orange County area. And we knew what we could do to the property, and we took it from what it currently was a sleepy little bed and breakfast to a great little boutique hotel.
So let's talk about Casa Resorts Incorporated, because as I said in the open, you know, that certainly that is one of your properties, but so is the Hotel Menage and the others. So could you help the audience to understand where you, Chris and Richard, have evolved the business to be today?
Yeah, we are a small operation still. We do have about six different businesses, but we still consider ourselves a pretty small operation. And we think of each business that we have as a very unique opportunity. And every time you enter one of our businesses, you feel kind of our signature, which is a very relaxed and very warm and inviting place, but something that's definitely different. And what we try to do is we try to fill voids in markets and in locations that have a need. And we've been pretty successful up to this point in doing that, both in Anaheim and Laguna Beach.
So when you guys, Chris, when you look at the things that you and Richard have learned in business, is there a guiding principle that you both use to lead your firm today?
Well, something we learned, we actually, it was ingrained in us, and both from our upbringing as well as from one of our previous bosses, but we did learn that it's all about taking care of the customer and going the extra mile and not missing those small details that make a world of difference. And we know that when we do that, when we accomplish those goals, everything else will fall into place. And with making that our forefront, we've been successful in building these great small businesses, and you know, we'll continue to do that. That's our number one priority from the top down, from us to, you know, every line member of our team.
So each property is somewhat different. Could you spend a minute with our audience who may not be familiar with each of your properties and just help them to understand what they could expect? You know, talk a little bit about the property and sort of what they could expect on their next visit there.
Absolutely. Well, our company comprises of three hotels and three restaurants. Our first hotel we bought back in 2002 was the La Casa del Camino. It's a 41-room boutique hotel. It's right in the heart of the village of Laguna Beach on the beach side of the highway. Great ocean views, great rooms, and a very Spanish Mediterranean style about the property. A couple great highlights. We have a rooftop deck, 2,000 square foot rooftop deck with a beautiful bar and lounge, and amazing sunsets, 360 degree view of the coastal hillside, and great appetizers and great mojitos. Also inside of the hotel, we have Kaya Bistro Bar. It's a little kind of a European San Francisco-esque type atmosphere. Every plate of food in there is under $10. It's a great value. And has a very lively, energetic atmosphere. In the grand lobby of the hotel, we have live entertainment every night. We have a pianist. And moving just down the street, we have a small little bed and breakfast we call Laguna Beach Inn. It's 23 rooms. We serve breakfast there daily. And that's probably the most value-oriented property in Laguna Beach. And the amenities there are great. It's right at Woods Cove Beach, an absolutely amazing location to be the beach. Our largest property is the Hotel Menage. That's located across from Disneyland. A couple of great highlights of that property is we have four beautiful suites, 240 guest rooms, very contemporary, 42-inch plasmas in all the rooms with high-definition television. And we have the highest street there is a restaurant. It's a large restaurant featuring a menu with different cities from around the world and different items from the streets of those cities. Like, as an example, in Chicago, we would have the hot dog. In Bangkok, we would have a shrimp dish. And anything that you would find in streets of those different cities, we We broke up the menu, and everything on that menu is also under $10. A couple other great aspects of the property, we have a beautiful outdoor palapa bar, and every night that Disney blesses us with their fireworks on Friday and Saturday night or in the summertime every night, you see the most beautiful fireworks show. It's actually made, almost looks like it was made for our hotel.
Wow.
And our latest property that we, our latest endeavor that we're taking on, that we're opening just in the next week or so, is House of Big Fish and Ice Cold Beer. It's a new location. It's a restaurant location, about 150 seats, and beautiful views of Laguna Beach coastline, great sunsets, and we're looking to make that a casual seafood house in Laguna Beach.
So you have quite a diversity in the offering of what you have. So someone who's staying in Southern California could get very different experiences just from staying in your three properties that are, you know, relative, for those who aren't familiar with Southern California, they're in relatively close proximity to one another, especially your Laguna Beach properties.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, talking about Laguna Beach properties, I know that you and Richard, Chris, had a bit of a trying time a while back, and it was a challenging situation for you guys. Could you describe how that situation turned out and turned actually into being a positive experience for your business?
I will. Actually, it was amazing, the outcome. I still think back today and I can't believe it, but originally what had happened is we had the rooftop bar at La Costa del Camino in Laguna Beach became a very busy, popular hotspot. In 2005, 2006, you can just look from the rooftop and look down into the streets and see Lamborghinis, Rolls Royces, people just swarming the block coming toward the hotel. And I think there was some misunderstanding originally of what the intent and the permits allowed on the rooftop. And so there was a couple of issues in city meetings that the city wanted to maybe reduce the number of people and limit it to just the hotel guests of the hotel. What happened at that time is it was really unbelievable that the community support that we received from all the people of Laguna Beach that came out to support us in these city council meetings and planning commission meetings. It was quite overwhelming for us as well as the city. Make a long story short, at the end of the day, everything worked out. We are continuing every day to do what we do, serve great food and drink on the rooftop of La Costa del Camino, and really giving the community a place to gather and enjoy each other's company. That was something that, you know, it was really the bread and butter of that entire operation. It was something that we felt very strongly that we had to keep as part of our stamp of that hotel. What's happened now is now we're a few years down the road, and from the time that incident happened until this point, our community support has been continuing, and it's helped not only our rooftop business, but also our business of our hotel and of the Kai Bistro inside the hotel. I know everyone's very excited in the community in Laguna Beach about our new opening of our new restaurant. So it's really helped to build our credibility within the city as well as our customer base and our loyalty. And, you know, we wouldn't, no matter how much it ended up costing us, no matter how much grief it gave us, we wouldn't change it. We wouldn't. Everything that happened was great. Our relationship now with the city is stronger than ever, and they've been extremely helpful and just been an amazing change of events for us, and it's been a great place to do business here on Laguna Beach.
Well, you know, we in our CEO peer group practice that Doug and I lead here in Orange County, many times business owners come in with quite challenging dilemmas that they're trying to work through, and it's good to hear a story like that, Chris, because it's a teachable moment, in my opinion, because sometimes I'm sure there were times when you and Richard were faced into this that you couldn't imagine this as being the outcome because you just were trying to resolve the issues one at a time that you were being faced with. But, you know, it is good to be able to tell a story to a business owner and say, hey, let me tell you about a couple recent radio show guests who maybe were in a similar mental place that you are right now, and let me show you how that turned that for them. They were able to turn that into a positive. So I'm sure that you two, as well as the support of the community to rally around you, but you must have also had to really think hard about what is the right way to solve this issue.
We did. It was a lot of time. It was a lot of effort. We had, of course, we had some legal advice. We had, some local, actually friends that are just local business owners that have been here in town for years. And so it was a very strategic, it was quite different than anything that we actually ever dealt with before. But I will tell you, Rick, someone said to me at the time, they said, you know what you're going through now, they said in 3 years, you're going to look back and say this was easy. And you're going to be presented with a whole another list of challenges. And they were right. They were right on the mark. We have, other challenges that we're going through, and they're all different. And they come up every day, as, most business owners will, agree with. That it just doesn't stop. And that's why we love what we do.
Well, that leads very naturally to the next question that I wanted to ask you both, which is, could you talk to the audience a bit about maybe a current one of those unresolved challenges, and really not just what that challenge might be, Chris, but what's always interesting for our audience that we hear back from our audience is sort of what do you think your options might be, and because they learn by your example.
Well, we're currently going through a challenge with our Anaheim property. We were notified by the city of Anaheim that for the last 3+ years that we've owned the hotel, and we've charged for overnight parking at the hotel and valet parking, that we should have been charging occupancy tax on that parking. Well, nowhere in Richard's 18 years and my 4 years experience in Anaheim have we ever charged occupancy tax on parking. So this was enlightening to us that we should have been charging it, and we haven't. And I think, we have our fingers crossed, and we're working closely with the city of Anaheim to resolve this. But it could be a very costly matter, and, it could put us in a detrimental situation if it doesn't get worked out. So we're hoping for the best, and, we're also discussing a lot with other business owners, other hotel owners that are in the same circumstance. And unfortunately, it comes at a time where the economy is what it is, and we're all in a difficult place, including the city. And I think everyone's just looking for ways to balance the budget for this year. So we're, keep your fingers crossed for us, and we're hoping it all works out for the best.
Could you share with us from your perspective, what do you see relative to the hospitality industry? What are you guys seeing? What are you reading? What are you hearing from your peers? What's the near-term future hold?
Well, I can say one thing that I think everyone would agree with. It's at least for the next 12 to 24 months, I think it's all about value, and it's all about getting value, whether that's in the restaurant or the hotel business. It's funny, I opening up the MGM Grand in 1993, I remember we were selling room rates at $59 as our opening grand rate. I think last week I received an email from the MGM Grand. They were selling room rates at $55. So it's, and I can't say that we're doing much different here at our properties, that La Casa del Camino, we're selling the same room rates that we were selling back in 2002. At Hotel Mirage, we are also in there, and we're staying extremely competitive because we like to go on the point of, heads in bed. But I think really value is the key factor in the hotel business currently, as well as in the restaurant business. We are pricing all of our restaurants to be value-oriented restaurants. Kaya Bistro, we not only have everything on the menu for under $10, it's gourmet food. It's exceptional food. You can get a filet for under $10. Even on top of that, we've gone further, and we started a happy hour from 4:30 to 5:30 daily, and we offer half off on all the food. So you literally can come into the restaurant and eat for less than you can going to the supermarket and cooking yourself at home. So I think that's, you know, that's part of our game plan. It's part of what we bring to the table. And, you know, we have an amazing chef on board that comes up with all these creative ideas, and we just help implement it and move forward. So just, I think value is probably the best key word for the next couple of years.
And thank you for sharing. And that's interesting because that's true in your industry, in your segment. It's true in many segments of many industries. You're not our first guest, and I'm not diminishing what you say. It's really important. All I'm trying to say is you're not the first guest that we've had on the show who said it's all about value. That's really interesting, and I know that you and Richard know. I'm not sure you guys are going to be able to attend because I think you're going to be out of town. But on March 23rd, we're having an executive conference here in Orange County to talk about not that very topic, but what do we think the impact of the past 2 years in the economy will have moving forward? And this clearly seems to me, Chris, to be a kind of common theme. The buyers are much more discerning and looking for perceived value in their transactions. They're willing to spend, but they're really looking for a perceived value.
That's right. They want value, and they also want the quality to go with the value. Mm-hmm.
Let's look back. I know you mentioned a couple times both you and Richard had good corporate pedigrees in the hotel industry, whether it's MGM or it's with Hilton. And I'm always curious to have another learning moment, if you will, but how much did that experience prepare you to come over now in, how did your hotel careers really prepare you to be owners of a hospitality group?
Well, the first thing I will say about it is my uncle told me a long time ago, he goes, make sure you go learn on someone else's dime. And in doing that, both Richard and I had just an amazing experience, both with the Hilton Corporation, as well as my experience with MGM Grand in New York. I think it's almost a necessity if you can go out there and learn the right way to do things, especially in an industry that you have that passion for. Because then what you can do is you can take that experience and that education, and you can translate that into your own philosophy and how you believe things should be run. And that's pretty much what we did. We both learned. Richard grew up in a corporate environment for 18 years with Hilton. I grew up in a corporate environment in Las Vegas where it went from slot machines to, 5,000-room hotel. And both of our experience has now been brought over into these smaller properties, but really the influence of our past has now, it's being shown in these properties, both from a trying to run things from a professional and keeping a corporate standard, but also with our twist on it and our personality in each of the properties and everything that we do.
So were there differences, though, and you can maybe share between, I can see perfectly what you're saying, learn, wise advice, learn on somebody else's dime or nickel, absolutely. But the day that you, actually took responsibility, formed your company, bought your property, all of a sudden now you're truly the final decision makers, right, within your firm?
Absolutely. Now I would say that our work ethic is still the same. Now we just work twice as hard and twice as long. And, basically, the difference is really it's having a very structured environment to having something to where you're trying to create the structure and where you're developing standards and practices that maybe somebody else implemented when you were with the corporation, or you followed the guideline. You pulled the book off the shelf and said, here's what our standard operating procedures are. Well, as you are in a small business, you have to create your own standard operating procedures. Not everything fits into the same category, and sometimes you have to create create things, and sometimes you have to do things on the fly. The difference for us is we now have freedom to do what we want to do. We don't have that hierarchy of, chain of command that we have to go up to try to get something done and approved that we know we have to do, and we have to make quick decisions. Another philosophy that we always live by is being fast, focused, and flexible in our approach. And that's what we like to, and that's how we like to operate our businesses, so we don't get stuck and we don't get too stale.
Thank you. You know, I know that within your property you have the restaurant, which it appears to be very popular, because as you were talking about the Kai restaurant, I was thinking back when you and I met. One of the times that we had met, it was right around that time when the restaurant opened, and there was quite a buzz in the lobby of what I perceived to be not only guests, but people from the community who were, or maybe they were coming to meet guests there, but there was quite enthusiasm for the restaurant to open. So I was impressed that at that time of the day, that during a weekday, frankly, that it had that much traffic going into it. So maybe it's because of part of what you talked about relative to the restaurant.
Rick, it amazes me every day when I walk into the lobby and I see 30 to 40 people waiting to get into the restaurant at 4:30. You know, and it reconfirms that we're doing the right thing.
Right. So, you know, I'm not an expert on the hospitality industry and what it takes to run a successful boutique hotel versus what it takes to launch a unique restaurant like House of Big Fish and House of Ice Cold Beer. But can you talk to the audience? We preach diversification to our members, and I do that here on the radio show every chance I get, because I think it's a good business strategy. I mean, what caused you to think and decide, for you and Richard, how'd you arrive at the decision that it's a good idea to add a standalone restaurant to your portfolio?
Well, you know, the first thing is we have a great team. We, you know, it's not myself and Richard were the two main operating partners. We have a great chef who is also a partner with us. He's the creative genius behind a lot of what we do. And then we have our partner from overseas, from Japan, who he really kind of gives us guidance and direction in which way to head. And, you know, what we've done really since 2002 is we've looked for opportunities and niches that need to be filled. And, you know, we have a lot of concepts on our plate and a lot of thoughts of a direction that we want to head. And when we see the right opportunity, even though the market, it's a sour market, it's a down economy, we don't feel the same way about it. We just feel like it's been a struggle for us since day one with all the different businesses that we've taken on, and we've made each one of them work in good markets and bad markets. And we're continuing with the same philosophy to where we try to watch our expenses as close as possible. We try to be creative as possible. And most importantly, we make sure that we do take care of our customers, whether it's in the restaurant or in the hotel, because they're the ones that are going to keep supporting us. And although business may be down, there's still business out there. It hasn't stopped completely. And I think it's just you have to be a little bit more creative and you have to work a little bit harder to get the people in, and you have to work a little bit harder to make it at the end of the day. And we're willing to do both of those. So we're not against taking on any new additional opportunities and even looking to grow the company even more than it is today.
So is the restaurant an existing restaurant that you're taking over, or can you explain to the audience a little bit more about House of Big Fish and Ice Cold Beer?
Absolutely. So this was a pre-existing restaurant. It used to be called the Aegean Cafe, if anyone knows it, in Laguna Beach. It has amazing ocean views. It has a great outdoor patio. It's about a 150-seat restaurant. The concept of the restaurant is a casual seafood house. And again, there in Laguna Beach, in the entire city of Laguna Beach, there's very limited number of seafood restaurant. So we knew that was a void that needed to be filled. The other missing element in Laguna Beach are restaurants with ocean views. You would think that the restaurant would be littered with plenty of restaurants with ocean views, but it's very limited. It's practically under 10. And we're happy to have one of the most prime locations and best views in the city. We have a great location right in downtown, right across from the Weiland Gallery and Hotel Laguna. And we're really filling the void. We've also gone as far as to add 5 large screen TVs. We do want to make sure that when there's games that are on or the Super Bowl's playing, that we're televising it here at the House of Big Fish and Ice Cold Beer.
Well, I look forward to the opportunity to dine there sometime. My mouth was watering a little bit as you're
Excellent.
Talking.
It's getting
close to lunchtime here, dinner time, and it just sounds good. All right. Chris, is there anything else about you or the firm that we've not talked about today that you would like to say?
No, we would just like to let everyone know that if they are interested, they can look up our website. Our newest creation was the houseofbigfish.com. That's the House of Big Fish and Ice Cold Beer. But then a little bit more on all of us. It's at Casa Resorts with an S, Inc.com. And feel free to give us a call. You can reach me at my my office line at 949-315-2222. And that's for, you know, anything, anyone interested in just anything from dining with us, staying with us, creating any packages, of course, any charitable stuff as well. We're happy to do it. And at all of our venues, we have great event space, great wedding receptions, great corporate events. So we're happy to do anything. Anyone can reach out to me at any time. We'd be happy to talk to them.
Well, on behalf of the listening audience and Critical Mass, the radio show, Chris Keller, I appreciate the time that you've put into the interview today and you and your partner, Richard, for preparing for this and being my guest today. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, and we'll see you at the House of Big Fish and Ice Cold Beer.
You will. Yes, you will. You certainly will. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
Bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris Keller. I encourage you, if you're looking for a dining experience with great value, to consider, you know, their restaurants, which are coming on, and their properties are great. The last time I was there, it was a rainy winter day here in California, and the fireplace was burning, and it was just a very, when he said a kind of a warm and inviting, it was very, very much that. So, and the views are fantastic from Laguna Beach property, so I would encourage you to, not that I'm here to sell their properties for them, I just find their, I like what they're doing in their business model. I think it's worth a visit. Doug and I believe the business owners and executives learn best from the experiences of their peers. And I believe you agree that, you know, our guest today gave us some ideas, especially sometimes it's darkest before the dawn, ladies and gentlemen. And you can, with a lot of effort and good strategy, have good outcomes to what are challenging situations. So I have the pleasure and the honor of being the host again tomorrow. So those that listen live, make sure you tune in tomorrow at 4 o'clock here on octalkradio.net. to listen to Critical Mass, the radio show. And until we talk again, here's hoping that all your decisions move your business in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on octalkradio.net.